Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.11. I wish I could bet on whether Ace was going to pound the table and scream soup over and over again. Welcome back to the MGO Podcast. I don't have any snappy crap to start this one with. A 27-17 loss to a previously winless Penn State team. Dogs and cats are living together. Brian Griese is saying enough is enough on Twitter. It's where we are, people.
I didn't even know Brian Griese was on Twitter, to be honest.
He's got a blue check mark and everything. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Ace Sandbender.
I am Seth Fisher, Lions fan.
Forward
well,
down
we'll
the field.
Talk about that in segment two. We are going to actually pay a little bit of attention to the game. But before we do that, let's pay lots of attention to our wonderful sponsors.
That's right, especially Underground Printing, who's presenting this for us. They, Reese and Ryan, have been our biggest supporters from the beginning. They're also behind the Ann Arbor Institutions program, which I don't know if anyone saw. But we brought back all the t-shirts, so you can stop asking me. They're all on the store now. And you can get 30% off anything all weekend with their Black Friday sale at ugp.io/shopmichigan.
All right, so...
Oh, wait, I have other sponsors,
Other
too.
Sponsors.
Oh, right, yes.
I have associate sponsors. And that is Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, and the Bow Store.
All right. So, you know, Michigan plays approximately half this game with a quarterback who can't throw more than about 8 yards downfield because of a shoulder injury. They brought in Joe Milton briefly, but as soon as McNamara was back and plausibly ready to go, they put him back in. For some reason, he averages under 4 yards an attempt. So here we have a quarterback situation where Dylan McCaffrey is on campus, but not on the team. Joe Milton is an option of last resort to the point where you're willing to put a broken quarterback out there over him. And if there's any word that can describe this sort of roster management that's not indefensible, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help that McNamara also pulled himself after nearly throwing an interception because his arm was so just shot that a basic out route almost got jumped by a defender. So it wasn't even the coach's decision when it became incredibly obvious that this dude just could not do what they were asking him to do even while trying to protect him. And he still had to, you know, tap himself out, and I don't think that's Cade McNamara's nature. So, I mean, it was pretty clear he did that about two quarters too late.
Yeah. And so when the quarterback has to be making the call on whether he can play or not, it's kind of where the adults in the room kind of situation.
Which and feels familiar.
The devastating Daily article in which one of the reporters who's close to the sideline catches Jim Harbaugh doing the Jeb Bush please clap to his teammates.
I think that was Theo Mackey as the reporter. We should give a shout out to him for having the brilliant idea to just stand behind the bench and listen because that was definitely the play for getting the best story out of this game. Oh, God. I think we had talked a little bit last week, and I know I talked a little bit on the Ace pod about how it was nice that this team was still showing some enthusiasm, and boy, that didn't last.
No, and the catch in question was a completely badass rescue of Cade McNamara's, I think, only downfield attempt of the game, where A.J. Henning skies over a defensive back and just rips it away. A play that I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. Like, and I'm checked out.
And yeah, I am between, like, taking notes and, like, slamming my head on the desk, and I was still, like, almost stood up for that one.
And the guys on the bench are just like, oh, I'm going to continue playing Parcheesi.
Yeah, there are some seriously bad feels around this team right now.
I mean, that one also came after Samerstil had 3 bad plays with his hands in a row, including dropping the punt, which was just like an absolute, that was like the, okay, this is not even going to happen, even if these teams are equal, we're not going to win this one. AJ Henning then makes that play after another catch that like was thrown way behind him and he adjusted to and actually saved the play a little bit.
That was actually a screen that went for negative yardage, but the catch was nice.
Impressive adjustment on that negative 3-yard passing play.
He made it look a lot better than the throw was. Point being, AJ Henning, that's a dude.
Yep, so, you know, Michigan, their ground game wakes up. You have Hassan Haskins actually graded out as the number 2 back of the week to Pro Football Focus, behind the guy for Buffalo who ran for like 400 yards and 8 touchdowns. So good week, Hassan Haskins. Evans and Corum also chip in. We don't see Charbonnet probably because he's hurt or just doesn't like the coach. So even in the context where what we saw last week in the second half of the Rutgers game continues, you have a functional run game. You're doing a pretty decent job. You just can't take advantage of that because your quarterback shouldn't be on the field, and you don't have the wisdom to go to the guy who was your anointed starter at the beginning of the season. Like, it's not like you're making the call to go to Dan Vellari, right? Like, this guy had a couple of good games against Minnesota and Indiana and Michigan State. Like, he's proven himself as a guy who can throw the ball downfield a little bit, and they just throw away a whole game on Cade McNamara's 3.6 yards an attempt.
Yeah, Milton also turfed one and really did not look like...
I know.
Didn't even look like himself. Like, I don't know how much they've broken Joe Milton, which, you know, just goes back to the program. When you have failure at this level, you know, you break quarterbacks, and it's quite plausible that he's been looking terrible and that he's skittish and that he's lost all of his coaching, and that's what you're getting if you put Joe Milton in.
Yeah, I mean, they kept alluding to him being hurt. Not alluding, just saying that he's kind of injured. And that wasn't anything that we'd heard until this game. And it's something that has been a very consistent thing throughout Harbaugh's tenure. Is just like, oh, by the way, like, these very critical players were playing through injuries, and it impacted their performance, maybe. And it sure didn't seem like, I mean, I think on Milton's first possession, they just didn't throw at all. So
correct.
It didn't seem like they wanted, something was holding them back from even calling passing plays with them. And considering that they were calling pass plays with a dude with half a throwing shoulder, I just don't know what's going on.
We get a lot of similar stories that we can never, you know, that we can't report on. It's just like, you know, somebody inside the program says this is going on, whatever. And I try to piece all that into like, what's wrong with this program? Why is the Harbaugh program falling apart? And it just seems that people, they don't like their coaches. I don't know how better to put it, but this team, I almost feel better that this team has kind of quit, because it means that there's a lot better they can be next year when they have a new coach, if they get a new coach.
When is a little optimistic there.
Well, I'm a huge Lions fan, and I should mention that I'm a big Lions fan, and I want everyone to know that I care very deeply about the Lions, and I want my Lions to hire Jim Harbaugh to fix this 70-year issue that we've got, because he's the only man for the job.
Hey, his level of success at Michigan would be absolutely freaking incredible if translated over to the Lions. So I really want the Lions to think about that.
Well, I mean, that really seems like the best scenario for the way this plays out, is that there's an NFL team on the hook. And Harbaugh knows that he'll have a chance to build that NFL team for at least a few years. And also, he's looking at the desolation he has wrought on Michigan's roster, and anticipating that next year isn't going to be a whole lot better than this year. So he'd rather jump for the relative safety of an NFL job at a loser franchise that just wants to be 500. maybe scrape into the playoffs every once in a while.
And then, whether that's the Lions or the Jets, we don't really care anymore. Yes,
whichever.
I know when you have money, it doesn't matter as much, but like he does really care about leaving his kids in school. Like, he can stay in Ann Arbor and live and be around all of his family and, you know, exactly what he always wanted with the Lions. So that job opening up really does kind of... Jim Harbaugh, I think, really wanted to make it work. I think that there's been like a narrative from the NFL that, oh, he just wants to go back to the NFL all the time. And all the time, we've been hearing from all the people who know him that, like, no, that's not true. He really, really wanted to make it work here. Obviously, it's not going to work here. I think the Lions is actually an opportunity that he can take and still have that lifestyle that he took the Michigan job for.
Well, I mean, we've seen reports from Nick Baumgartner, Sam Webb, guys who are plugged in pretty deep into the program, that Ward Manuel was not inclined to axe Jim Harbaugh as of a couple weeks ago. And who knows if that's going to change over the next few games, especially if Michigan gets absolutely clobbered by Ohio State. If
they play the game, you mean?
Well, there's that.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two options. So,
I mean, you know, we had a similar situation going on with Brady Hoke, where it's like, oh, yeah, he's going to be back for another year. And then we had the Shane Morris incident, and who knows what would have happened if that didn't, right? Like, if there isn't a protest on the diet of the athletic director after an absolutely gargantuan fuck-up of a PR process.
Oh, and if Michigan... that athletic director doesn't also send nasty emails to fans and then get fired for it, so it's a lot easier to fire the coach that the guy was tied to.
Right, so like, Ward Manuel isn't going to do that. Ward Manuel isn't going to get fired this offseason. He's going to be making the call here. And Michigan is pretty much the one school I can imagine not making the decision to move on.
And what really sucks is that means they probably need to give Harbaugh an extension.
I mean, it can be a phony extension where you're lowering his buyout, that kind of thing.
I mean, it can only be so phony. This is they have to publicly report it.
Yeah,
I know, but like, I don't think anybody is going to read into the fact that his buyout is $4 million instead of $10 million.
Michigan fans aren't going to have lawyers.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that it won't be public, but like, what's
people who matter? I mean,
right.
It'll at least salvage recruiting. Although I think some coaches would probably still try to point towards the buyout to some people and be like, hey, like, this is a little fake.
I mean, it's not like anybody who commits to Jim Harbaugh next year isn't going in with full awareness of the possibility he gets axed, right? Like, it's not news.
It's not next year. They're going to, isn't early signing day still just in a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
So, yeah,
that may be the swing point. I mean, because I think one of the biggest arguments for keeping him, obviously, is trying to hold together this recruiting class as best you can.
I mean, you can't make a decision based on a recruiting class after watching the clown show on the field like this. I mean,
I totally agree with you. I'm just saying one of the arguments, sure, coming from the Keep Harbaugh camp, yeah, that I completely disagree with, because it is extremely short-sighted and might not work out anyway.
Well, you have to be honest with these kids. I mean, if you're thinking about axing him, you have to let them know that before they sign a contract saying that they can't get out of in December.
Ideally, yeah, that'd be good. I hope Michigan makes decisions in the way that works out that way.
Yeah.
Well, let's stop pretending we're talking about the game, take a break, come back and talk about other coaches.
It's Black Friday today, and friend of the pod, Underground Printing, has you covered. Underground Printing is a great local business with multiple stores in Ann Arbor, including the Bose store. And they have tons of great Michigan apparel you can wear to proudly rep the maize and blue. Tackle all of your holiday gift needs with their Black Friday retail sale and shop safely with a 30% discount on all online orders, as well as free shipping on orders of $75 or more. Visit ugp.io/shopmichigan and make your Black Friday the easiest one ever with UGP.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy. His name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he's like, "Yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it."
I also like I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
Wrong. We need to talk about one more thing from that football game, which is James Franklin getting first and goal with 31 seconds on the clock and a timeout and spiking the ball on first down. Then he throws a fade. The worst goal line play.
And they spike the ball. So they had the timeout. They take about, 10 seconds off the clock to line up for that spike. And they are at that point lined up in a position to call a play.
And they end up taking a field goal with 17 seconds of a timeout on the clock.
So at least James Franklin is still James Franklin. And that is of some comfort coming out of this game.
Well, then we punted from the 43 on 4th-and-3. So we were not immune to the framesing. But by God.
I mean, that was... That was just spectacular.
I'd like to point out that I scouted this. This was in the faux film offense that he throws fades when he gets down in the red zone, because that's what he thinks is to his tiny guys too. Jahn Dotson is like the tallest guy that they have out there.
Well, that was enough supplemental talk about the game.
Yep.
Now we're serving the available coaches out there and
soup. Soup.
I mean, I can't disagree, right? Like, the thing about Campbell is that he stayed at Iowa State long enough to establish them as a mid-level Big 12 program, which has never happened before. Like, it's not a one-off fluke based on one quarterback or an anomaly in terms of talent. You know, he's consistently built that program until the point where they're almost locked into the Big 12 championship game this year, I believe.
Yeah, I think they're at a 99% chance of making the Big 12 championship game. Other positives for Campbell, he's an Ohio guy who is not an Ohio State guy. He is a Mount Union guy, which he's got ties to Ed Warner through that, which if there was one coach from this current staff that I'd like to keep around, that would be the one. So that might be and also it's just nice that Campbell has a connection to an actual coaching tree, which you cannot say about anybody who has a solid connection to Michigan's coaching tree. But Campbell's also coming off of, I mean, this is kind of the example of what he does is Iowa State just beat Texas. Iowa State has 4 four-stars on their entire roster, which is impressive recruiting for Iowa State, but still pales in comparison to Texas's, what, like 40-plus four-star or better recruits on that team. And Iowa State not only looked every bit as talented and well-coached, but they have the better NFL prospect at quarterback in Brock Purdy right now, which was a heck of a find for Campbell. They also have like a high-level NFL tight end prospect who I've drafted in my fantasy dynasty leagues. So I had an interest in this even before Matt Campbell really jumped to the forefront of my mind this year. But they just look. I mean, they run a modern defense. They run they run a stack of sorts that actually works because they practice it.
Well, they run the tight. They're one of the first teams that they call it the Aztec or whatever, but they run the same defense that like Army ran against us, which is like an anti-spread. Basically, they play Ohio State's offense every week, and they are one of the best teams at defending it.
Yeah, I mean, they've had they've had to go against Big 12 passing attacks for a long time, and now everyone's kind of playing like Big 12 offenses have for the last decade or so. So Campbell got a head start on that. He's also, I mean, those offenses have been pretty solid. He's been able to find talent there. So he's my number one choice. I think with a bullet at this point, assuming that Luke Fickell is probably not particularly realistic.
Is Luke Fickell probably not realistic? Because if Luke Fickell wants the Ohio State job, I mean, how long is he going to be waiting? Is Ryan Day really going to leave one of the best situations in football for some NFL job? It kind of feels like the answer is no.
No, that's true. I mean, but I think the other job that Luke Fickell may be waiting for is Notre Dame, and that could come up. I mean, that still might not open up for a little bit, but that might come up sooner. It just, I don't know, the man like coaches with a Buckeye over his heart, like, and he's not even coaching Ohio State right now. Like, like he's got something good going at Cincinnati. I do wonder if, you know, just firing the money cannon, you know, makes him really think hard about how much it's worth waiting a few years and potentially longer for the, you know, the gig he really wants to open up. But at the same time, this is a guy who also, you know, played in the NFL for a little bit. Like he's not hurting for cash necessarily. So this is somebody who, if someone's in a position to maybe wait out for the exact gig they want, especially given his like pretty strong loyalties, Fickell may be that guy. If he's on the market and is willing to think about it, then absolutely Michigan should throw enormous bags of money his way.
I mean, I think that he's probably more available than even the Buckeye over his heart seems, just because coaches want to coach at the top level. They want to think the coaches are more, you have to be a certain level of insane just to be a good coach. And, you know, I've done a whole lot of history, which means I've, you know, done a whole lot of Bo stories. And if you go back to anything that Bo said before he went to coach at Michigan, even if he was a Miami, Ohio guy, but he was kind of a Buckeye over his heart guy too. And then the minute he got the Michigan job, it was just, you know, I am Michigan now. And
it's a little, I mean, Bo was Fickell played for Ohio State. He came up through Ohio State. He was their interim head coach. I think his situation's a little different. Rich Rod turned down the Alabama job because he was super loyal to West Virginia. And then picked the wrong gig to take. But that's a story.
I mean, if he took the
well.
Alabama job, that would have been the wrong gig to take for him. There was no
that
right
is also true
for Rich Rodriguez. I just want to go back to
West Virginia.
Yeah,
was.
I just want to go back to the idea that Fickell might be waiting out the Notre Dame job. Last 4 years, Brian Kelly is 9-0, 11-2, 12-1, and 10-3. So
he's doing pretty well.
You know, he's a guy who could probably take a bullet of a near 500 season and still continue, despite the fact that the Notre Dame fan base seems to hate him, because no athletic director is going to look at that record at Notre Dame, a team that a school that has some legitimate restrictions on who they can recruit and be like, yeah, we're going to get a definite upgrade from this. So if Fickell is waiting for one of the other Midwestern powers to open up, I don't think it's going to happen in the near future. The job that I think he might be on hold for is Penn State.
Yeah, no, that's reasonable. I mean, my Fickell stuff is also because I've, you know, pinged a couple other people who know the coaching stuff better than I do, and that's their sense of the situation as well, is that Fickell is not a realistic option. So that's not me looking at his resume and going, I don't think he'd take this. I mean, maybe waiting for the Penn State job makes more sense, honestly, but it'd be a little wild to stay at Cincinnati over, you know, doubling your salary most likely, if not more so, and getting into the Big Ten over gigs that you might have to wait 5 years to take. But he might do it, apparently. I don't know.
So I don't know what it looks like past the two kind of obvious candidates. Like, you look around college football and there's like the two hot guys who are in the top 10. And then it's like, backup options are not great.
Can we talk Jeff Hafley?
Ohio State fans want us to, or don't.
That's the one that they're most terrified of.
I don't.
Plus, like, he beat out Michigan for a couple Boston recruits, like, after we've been taking everybody in Massachusetts. He seems to, like, be really good at recruiting. He maybe, you know, he plays dirty on the recruiting trail, I've heard, which I want. And, you know, Boston College has looked pretty decent this year for the talent on their roster.
I mean, that's crazy. He's a first-year head coach who's 6-4 at Boston College. Before that, he spent 1 year at Ohio State, and then he was an NFL guy for a decade. And he's been an NFL guy for for a decade. So, I mean...
Yeah, the especially crazy part is Ohio State, like the 11 Warriors poll that had him at the very top of coaches who they would be frightened that Michigan would hire.
I don't really think we should be taking advice on who to hire from QAnon, the fan base.
That is fair. That is totally fair. I mean... It is very thin in terms of other coaches because I think it's unlikely, obviously, you know, for reasons we've discussed at length, that Michigan is going to be able to get a Michigan man because they don't exist. Yeah, Nick Sheridan. I don't know.
It's Nick Sheridan. It's Mike Hart. Tyrone Wheatley, who's the head coach of an HBC.
Scott Loeffler.
All right, so he's...
would be the worst hire ever.
So I have a guy who might fit. And it's Kalani Sitake, who's BYU's head coach. He's 45. He's LDS. He's currently got them 9-0. Before that, they were 7-6, which is tough because they're an independent, you know, so their schedule can be pretty brutal. And... in college, he was a fullback.
I mean, I don't think he's leaving BYU.
Well, you could say that, but you also could say that about Bronco Mendenhall, who everybody thought...
That's true, but how well did that Bronco Mendenhall hire work out? I mean, like, I would be extremely not excited about Sitake as a hire. That just sounds like a way to go.
He's 500 at Virginia. That's pretty good for Virginia. And he started off 2-10 because they were such a crater. So he's actually been fairly solid. He went 6-7, 8-5, 9-5, and he's 4-4 this year. So, like, for
Sitake, I think if you had watched more BYU games and saw some of his what I would call ultra conservative game management, you might be a little put off by him as a coach.
So he's a culture fit.
Like, someone brought up Shaw.
On the other hand,
like, I have no hope that we're going to get, like, anybody from, like, the Mike Leach pirate tree. It's just not happening. So that's, like, baked into my expectations.
No, that's totally fair. I mean, Mac Campbell or bust?
I wish you...
That's kind of where I'm at. Just giant bags of money at Mac Campbell.
Well, yeah.
Well, what? Like, I mean, this is the year, like, realistically, this is the year where he gets plucked. Because you're never going to do better at Iowa State. You're just not.
Well, and Texas getting, is going to pluck him if we don't.
Yeah, yeah. Also, somebody else is going to take him. Like, Tom Herman is hopefully doing just well enough in Texas to not get fired yet.
But if Texas comes at him, we're not going to get him.
Well, I don't know. Campbell's a Midwest guy.
Yeah, but...
And Texas comes with its own set of, I don't know, hurdles for a head coach, shall we say. So I could see, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't love it if Michigan suddenly had Texas competition for Matt Campbell. But hopefully they'd at least have a shot. But this is why I want Michigan to move fast. You gotta get in while the getting is good.
We can envision a version of Michigan that operates logically and moves fast, but let's keep it realistic.
Let's be realistic. God damn it.
I mean, other than that, like, I don't even know who the options really are. Like, Eric Bieniemy, maybe, but I don't think he's not going to get an NFL head job.
He's going to get an NFL job. Yeah.
I mean, if you can convince him that the NFL is too racist and he'll get fired in 3 years for not winning enough, even though it's not
his fault. I
kind of
feel like that has to happen to him first before he would take a college job.
I mean, the fact that he hasn't gotten a head coaching job already is probably
convinced him. There's various North Turner spawn who continually get several jobs at the same time. I don't think that's actually true.
Adam Gase is an NFL head coach, and that is an indictment of the entire
league.
They
could just hire some more assistants from the Patriots. That always works out.
That's a great idea. Well,
there you go. The Lions fired Jim Caldwell and hired Matt Patricia. Like, there's your case example right there.
Well, I mean, that's the sale job you'd have to make, right? Like, there's no other way that I think you would get him from.
It's not. I mean, it's probably not happening. It's about as likely as Joe Brady, who's like an NFL guy through and through. Might be in line for a head coaching job after this year, just because of what he's done as an offensive coordinator at multiple stops, turning things around immediately.
I wish Charles Woodson had gone into coaching. He seems like he'd been really good
Charles
at
Woodson
it.
Charles Woodson worked too hard for too long to be like, yep, I'm going to be a coach. He's not insane. Like, that's like what you have to be. You have to be out of your mind.
Dude has his own line of wines. Why would he ever coach?
Well, there's a young up-and-coming whippersnapper who's doing wonderful things on the recruiting trail and is 6-2 this year. You guys interested? It's Mack Brown!
Don't even. There's a guy who's doing all right things at San Jose.
No, not even!
State. I mean,
Boo! Boo.
There's a guy named Stoops who's been coaching at Kentucky. Knows how to recruit.
That's
Michigan.
Actually a name people have been throwing around, although that's not going to happen.
I never know when my jokes are going to land or if they're going to be like, oh, like, someone
so
takes that seriously.
The problem is that everybody who's vaguely plausible has been brought up in some sort of serious way. So when you say that, I don't hear you being sarcastic. I hear the internet being like, Mark Stoops, let's do it.
Yeah, my brain has been deeply poisoned.
So I know we've mentioned this and it's unlikely to happen, but if we're going off the board and we're going for coordinator levels, small school levels. I think both you and I, Ace, have brought up Jim Leonard, the Wisconsin defensive coordinator.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I would much prefer Michigan take a shot at plucking him away from Wisconsin as a defensive coordinator. But yeah, he's a Wisconsin guy, so that isn't going to happen. But he's recruited good talent for that defense. He's coached that defense very well. I am a little worried about, I mean, Wisconsin's just had a long line of very successful defensive coordinators, and none of them have really risen to the head coach level. So I'd be a little worried about anyone who's hasn't run a program before, because a lot of the issues with Michigan have been program running stuff.
Yeah, so Dave Aranda is the head coach of Baylor right now after moving to LSU. He's in his first year.
That's right. Baylor kind of falls off my radar a little bit because I try to ignore that they exist.
Well, I mean, the thing is attractive about Wisconsin is if there's a culture that clearly has some things going for it and is kind of vaguely like Michigan's culture in a Midwestern man ball kind of way, like, that's a situation where I could see him coming in, fitting in reasonably well, and being able to repair the various diseased aspects of Michigan's screwed up internal culture. I mean, clearly this is an off-the-board pick in this situation. Fickell's turned you down. Matt Campbell's turned you down. Everybody who's a head coach who seems vaguely plausible doesn't really click, and now you're in Jim Tressel mode, right? Which is, we all laughed at when Ohio State hired Jim Tressel. We're like, he's a D2 coach. But he happened to be a very good coach. Just that Ohio State plucked him before he had the opportunity to work his way all the way up the ranks. So,
and everything works out for Ohio State.
Yeah, he's at least you're going for a young guy with upside there, and that I'd at least accept that, because God, I actually dared to pull up the 11 Warriors post just to get a look at the names on here.
This is where we are.
Well, I just wanted to see, like, you know, what's the pool that they're pulling from? Because they did at least a good job of pulling an extensive list of names.
Is Michael Flynn on the list?
He almost... I think he was the last cut. Because Les Miles is on there. Mel Tucker is on there. Albeit third from last. Although dead last is Jim Harbaugh.
They could hire Mel Tucker and then immediately fire him and pay the buyout.
Bill O'Brien is on there. Lane Kiffin. David Shaw. Jeff Brohm, who just lost to Rutgers after hiring Bob Diaco this offseason. Chris Peterson, who retired. PJ Fleck, who Michigan beat this season
by 25 points.
Yeah. Pat Fitzgerald, who's probably just locked into a better situation at Northwestern at this point. He's not leaving. Bob Stoops is on there.
Oh, every time someone asks him, Ryan just comes down with more money for him.
Bob Stoops is seventh on Ohio State's list, or the 11 Warriors list. Two spots behind Matt Campbell. The two guys that scare them that we have not mentioned are Brent Venables, who is Clemson's defensive coordinator and is not leaving because he has not left yet and has two of his kids playing on that team. And I think one of them is a freshman and the other is a sophomore or something, and he's not leaving until they're done. So that's just not happening. The other is Mario Cristobal at Oregon. Shine came off that a little bit when they lost to Oregon State.
So, in the fog. That was a weird game to be
very an weird game.
Coordinator.
But also, I mean, I think that seemed like a kind of off the wall, out of area hire to begin with. I just don't know if the fit is great there. And then, I don't know, I just like Campbell better as a coaching candidate. So, but I guess Cristobal is a name where you could take shot if things don't work out elsewhere.
Realistically, is the head coach of Oregon going to come to Michigan now? I don't think so.
Probably not, especially not with the Nike right. money and cannon.
So the one guy who
out there
they didn't mention, who we haven't mentioned, who we have mentioned before, is Tom Allen. So
yeah, I mean, I have been trolling Indiana fans by bringing him up frequently, but he's done a great job there. He's got Indiana competitive with Ohio State,
more
sort
competitive of than Michigan.
They're a lot more competitive than Michigan. I don't love the hires he's made on the offensive side of the ball. He did bring in Mike DeBoard as his offensive coordinator after he had been at Tennessee and been run out. And Nick Sheridan kind of seems to be a DeBoardian.
I don't think that's fair. When
a little
they
bit
know that they can't run, they just stop trying. So they barely tried against Michigan.
Okay, that's early in the season. They were not doing that. They were slamming the ball into the line on first down on a very regular basis.
He's also a 30-year-old first-time offensive coordinator.
He is in his first
like
year.
You have to give him a little time just to get settled.
Yeah. So, but like it was still kind of an uninspiring like internal promotion there. But his defenses have been really good. They're finding ways to win. His teams seem to love him, which. Considering what we've been hearing about Harbaugh is not something to necessarily discount. So they could definitely do a lot worse than Tom Allen. I'd say that.
Yep. So I guess he'd be the third guy who you would add to the bin of fairly plausible guys, along with Fickell and Matt Campbell.
I mean, if we're going inside the Big Ten, we should talk about Jeff Brom.
We just did.
I thought we did.
The discussion we hired Bob Diaco.
Lost to Rutgers. Oh, yeah. Lost to Rutgers this week.
Forgot about Off that. Off the board. Forgot about that. You know, it's funny. Joe Moorhead would have been a name.
I'd still take Joe Moorhead. I mean, he got run out of Mississippi State because, I mean, he was not a cultural fit. And he didn't even get 3 years there. He got 2 years and he got the axe.
Yeah, that's a very difficult situation. Maybe you get him as an offensive coordinator on the rebound. That'd be a heck of a pull.
Coordinator right now.
He is.
Okay. So maybe that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, I would love it. That was the whole point. One of the reasons we got Jeff. One of the reasons we got Josh Gattis was because he was, you know, a Joel Moorhead acolyte. Seems to be more of a James Franklin acolyte now.
Thanks. Thank you. What about Bob Stitt? Bob Stitt's still out there.
I don't know if we still know what Josh Gattis. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have a Colorado School of Mines shirt now. I mean, I'm ready to roll.
I do, too. My sister-in-law lives out there.
Blaster the Burrow.
I visited their stadium and everything. I was ready to go, and then they lost him to, Montana State? He went somewhere and just did not...
Montana and got fired after 3 years, where he went 21-14 to a team that had previously been a 1AA power. Sorry, FCS.
Well,
you were going to have to clarify it either way. goodness, the names on this list. The bottom half.
It's like those.
What about Larry Johnson Sr.?
He's like 75.
Larry Johnson Sr. No, he's like 60-something right now, isn't he?
He's going to be Ohio State. He was going to be Ohio State's coach yesterday.
Yeah.
I
mean, even if you have him just for a few years, you know, turn Michigan into an Ohio State operation and hand it off to somebody he knows, because he knows everybody.
Craig Bohl? Anybody? North Dakota State head coach for a million years? He's gone 500 at Wyoming.
I mean, he did do a great job there. Yeah, I am becoming more convinced that like regionality matters, especially in college football and those connections. And I would like somebody with at least some sort of connection to the Midwest, unless they're like a home run guy and somebody who's stuck out in the Great Plains. Doesn't quite fit, I don't think.
Also, North Dakota State is a situation like hiring from the Patriots. So, of course, Chris Kleeman is currently the Kansas State head coach, took over for Craig Bohl. They went 15-1, 13-2, 12-2, 14-1, and 15-0 in his tenure. And then the guy who just took over took them to an undefeated national championship season in his first year. So at this point, picking off North Dakota State head coaches is... A Belichick move.
Yeah. Lance Leopold comes up every once in a while. Buffalo's head coach, who took over a pretty moribund program there, has at least taken them to two bowl games in the last 2 years, won the MAC East title. Before that, he was at Wisconsin Whitewater and kind of snapped Mountain Union's hold on Division III's national championship and won, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 national championships in 8 years there.
That might be plausible because Ward is from Buffalo.
So yeah, there is a little bit of a connection there. He played at Wisconsin Whitewater, so he is a Midwest guy, and he has succeeded in some pretty difficult circumstances. And we also just mentioned that his earlier in this podcast that his running back just went for like 400 yards and 8 touchdowns in a game. So that sounds kind of at least a little appealing. I don't know.
Yep. All right. Well, I think we've exhausted the pool here. So let's take another break, come back, and talk some hockey, which didn't go as well as we had hoped.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Win or lose this season, stop in to Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Speaking of coaching stock, Jim Harbaugh would be the most successful Lions coach in 30 years.
Just 30?
Who's he beating out?
Wayne Fonts. Wayne Fonts.
Wayne Fonts.
Wayne Fonts at his one playoff win.
Is that a hot take?
I mean, I'm not going to say that he's going to win a playoff game because it's still the Lions, but no, they're in pretty dire shape right now, and Jim Harbaugh knows the NFL really well. He took a team and pretty much worse shape than the Lions are now into the playoffs in 3 years. And, you know, what are his problems? He's got, you know, who can't beat Ohio State. You don't play Ohio State if you're the Lions.
Don't have to recruit either.
Right.
The GM picks the defensive tackles and cornerbacks.
And if you want to yell at people, they're getting paid. They have to listen to you.
All right. So
I honestly think he would be a successful Lions coach. I think it's a perfect fit, and I think the Lions should move on it right away.
As a Michigan fan and Lions fan, I'm in full support of this. My Lions fandom may be somewhat contingent on things.
I don't want people to doubt my intentions here. I'm saying this completely from a Lions fan perspective, and I'm not at all trying to convince the Lions to take Jim Harbaugh off our hands. I really just think the Lions are going to win it all with Jim Harbaugh.
I think you were good until that last...
got out over your skis at the end there, buddy.
All right. Ace, give me your hottest take.
Basketball games that are scheduled for the weekend during football season need to be on Saturday so we can talk about them during this podcast.
Well, they will be.
Michigan plays the next three Sundays, this one included. They play at 6 o'clock today, so by the time you hear this, that game will probably have already happened, but we will not have been able to talk about it, and that'll also be the case for the next 2 weeks.
If people need us for the takes on the Oakland game, I don't...
Well, I mean, you know, Oakland game aside, but you've got Central Florida, which is actually a pretty interesting non-conference game next week, and then the week after that is the Big Ten opener against Penn State. And we're not going to be able to discuss these things on this podcast because they think that Michigan fans want to watch football instead of basketball, and they are wrong.
We could move the time we do this.
You know, they need to acquiesce to us at this point. We've been through a lot.
It's true. All right, my hot take is Shaundi Brown is basically Josh Christopher.
I like it.
So Christopher actually went off in Arizona sure State's did. Second game, but I was just thinking about this during Michigan's opener and what Christopher is going to bring in terms of usage and offensive efficiency that Brown probably isn't if he's not hitting 5 of 7 threes. I think Brown is going to make up for with the fact that he looks like a Charles Matthews level perimeter defender, and Josh Christopher emphatically is not. So the situation when you get one of these transfers is essentially like getting a very good one-and-done recruit. Like, if you're looking at overall program impact, getting Shaundi Brown is, what ranking would he be if he was suddenly a recruit and you got him for 1 year?
That's a good question, because, I mean, obviously they rank guys with NBA potential in mind, so it's kind of hard to suss that out.
Right, but just for, like, college-level stuff, like...
But for, like, an impact, like you know, you'd probably have him as, like, a top 50-ish guy, right? And then, I mean, and to your point, you know, I was just listening to Sam Vecenie's NBA Draft podcast, and they're talking about Isaiah Todd and, you know, kind of just trying to figure out what he is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we were discussing this when he was a commit to Michigan, so this is not just some sour grapes about that he ended up in the G League. Like, I'm not sure what he was necessarily going to bring to the... Like, we were always talking about how he was going to project as a better NBA player than a college player.
Yeah.
So Michigan actually ended up coming out ahead, I think, for this... And especially
that is the hot take right there.
I mean, yeah, there's my hot take. Getting Shaundi Brown was better than getting Isaiah Todd.
Oh, I agree with that 100%.
Because the worry with Isaiah Todd was that the real impact would be on the recruiting trail of, like, not being able to land 5 stars, and apparently that's not a problem. So
I don't know where he would fit on this team either.
Yeah, no, it was going to be kind of an awkward fit, but you take the guy because he's a top 10 prospect, and you want to have those kind of guys come through your program. But in terms of impact for this year, would take Shaundi Brown 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Howard stays active in the grad transfer market, because it looks like, at least early, the two guys he's picked up are going to be key components of this team. And even if, well, and especially if when you're recruiting at the level he is, you're going to have guys leave and you might not entirely have planned for. So, yeah, I think more Shaundi Browns would be good.
And next year, there's going to be a lot of grad transfers available because all the seniors right now have eligibility next year, too.
That's true. So, I mean, you could actually get Brown back and Mike Smith if you had minutes for him. Oh, and who knows, right? Like, maybe they will.
Big if with the class that they've got coming in. But
Also, a guy like Brown can go play overseas, and he might want to get that started.
Absolutely. But, I mean, Michigan is definitely set up to have a lot of the good type of roster problems going forward. I mean, they already kind of have it this year, trying to find minutes for everybody.
All right, if you'd like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, go get yourself some Fuego Box. They'll send you 3 hot sauces every month chosen for flavor, not merely heat. Go to FuegoBox.com/mgoblog for $10 off your first month. And now we welcome in Dave Nasternak, our hockey correspondent, for a reality check weekend, I think is a fair thing to say.
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily pump the brakes extremely, but like, there are going to be different kinds of hockey Michigan's going to have to play, and they did not do super well, I would say, in the first grind-o-matic weekend that they would get. They'll get other opportunities, I think, coming up against probably Ohio State and Michigan State, but tough to kind of play the master at it first.
Yeah, so they lose 3-2 on Friday and 2-1 on Saturday to a Notre Dame team that looks like, I mean, every time you watch this team play, it's varying levels of Ron Mason, Michigan State, and they were very much on their trap game the whole weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, they did do that, but they also are, I sit kind of in front of a guy who scouts for different players, and he was just saying they're just so good defensively, like in their own zone. They build their fortress, but the sticks are in passing lanes. They use their bodies well. You know, it's just, if Michigan couldn't really create a ton in the offensive zone. They had some chances in transitions that they didn't finish, and they had a couple chances on the power play, although they didn't get many penalties because, again, Notre Dame doesn't take a lot of penalties. So those were their chances to win the games and convert. They couldn't, and, you know, you don't get a lot of really great offensive zone chances against the Notre Dame team, especially against this one, who apparently has some pretty good defensemen. And it's down to goalie. Like, St. Cyr played against Wisconsin, you're like, okay, you know, maybe there's some cracking points there. But, I mean, if you told me this was Cale Morris, I probably would have believed you.
Well, and, you know, the other thing is that these games were extremely close and decided on thin margins. So the goal that Notre Dame got on Saturday was just a shot from the point that deflected off a Michigan stick right into the top of the net. You know, the Friday game, Michigan significantly outshoots Notre Dame, but a couple of pretty harmless-looking shots from the perimeter probably deflect and go in, and then they have a breakaway they score on. Michigan has a breakaway they do not score on.
Right.
And it's just, you know, you get these games against Notre Dame, and it's like, when's the first goal going to come? And then you have a totally different game if it's your goal. Because they have to open up a little bit and they have to play a style of hockey that they're not 100% comfortable with. But once they go up, it's a rough, rough, rough attempt to get back.
Well, nobody really likes to watch that kind of hockey, you know, unless you continue to win at it. And, you know, Jackson has been successful at it, and he's gotten Michigan a number of times. We thought this year Michigan would have the talent and the skill to be able to sort of outmaneuver some of that stuff. But, I mean, people kind of slept on Notre Dame in terms of, and, you know, Alex and I even said that we didn't take them as seriously probably as we should have, but as how good they are in their own end. And, you know, Michigan did create some chances, but, you know, a lot of their skill guys, their high-end skill guys, are still very young and not physically mature yet. And when you have to win battles on the boards, or you get a guy that bumps you when you're skating into the zone, and you're 17 and the other guy is 20, you know, there's a big difference there. And that's something that we talked about coming into the whole year that could get Michigan at times is, you know, they do have better skill and they do have some more sound discipline, I think, in ways, but they're just not physically ready for some of these, like, really big defensemen and strong battles that, you know, are going to happen when you play some of these more defensive teams.
I mean, we've seen the same thing, you know, with hot young hockey teams forever. Like, Michigan's always had, like, the young crop who goes against one of these lock teams, like a Ron Mason, Michigan State example, and just gets shut down. Because the way you got to beat that is speed through the neutral zone, and you got to practice that for years until you're actually good at it. And then teams, when you start breaking out against them, that's when you know. You will see it eventually. You might even see it by the end of the year. But I think almost you could have expected this because, like you said, it's such a young team, and they can get knocked off their skates. They don't have the feel for each other on the ice yet, necessarily, that you need to have to break that system.
Well, and, you know, one thing that they tried to do on Saturday was dump the puck a lot more. And that got the puck deep, but you could really see the difference in age and experience on those puck battles on the boards, which it seemed Notre Dame won 2/3 of.
Like, a lot.
It was, you know, you're just watching Kent Johnson go down there, and it's like, Kent Johnson's a really good hockey player, but if half the game's played on the boards, you know, he's going to lose out to guys who are older than him.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm talking about there, that, like, that's what they want to do is create those dump-offs, because then they can win against the boards. That's the whole point of that defense.
The other thing is that when you look at, so Notre Dame scores, what, 4 goals basically the weekend? I mean, they had an empty netter, but whatever. So 2 of those come off of pretty bad defensive zone turnovers from Michigan. Like, Summers had a pretty bad one, and they coughed up another one. Or yeah, I think it was Power that pinched up when Beniers was taken off the puck at the attacking blue line. And, you know, that's just sort of stuff you can't do again. You know, you just can't give them those sort of opportunities. And, you know, when Notre Dame didn't really do that to Michigan. I mean, obviously Michigan's going to force a couple of turnovers in the zone, but the ones that Michigan did have were pretty bad, and Notre Dame made him pay for it. I mean, it's like Top Gun, right? Iceman is Iceman because he flies ice cold and waits for you to make a mistake. Well, I mean, that's Notre Dame.
Yeah, well, so one of the things that we've seen over the past the few years is that Michigan, when they play Notre Dame, Notre Dame can become sort of a measuring stick. So more than one sort of second half surge from Michigan, even with teams that didn't have as much talent as this one, kicked off with going into Notre Dame and sweeping them or taking 3 points, well, 5 points now, I guess, out of a weekend. And so the second Notre Dame series, I think, is going to be a really important measuring stick for how far these extremely young freshmen have come. And, you know, Michigan should get better faster than most teams in the Big Ten just because they have so much talent and they have such a large freshman class that, you know, younger players get better faster than older players. So, you know, I don't think that Michigan got played off the ice this weekend. I think that they just had some inopportune turnovers. You know, they didn't get on the power play very much because Notre Dame is so disciplined, and then they were on the wrong end of a lot of puck luck.
Yeah, and that happens, and, you know, you know, Notre Dame loses their goalie, they just plug the guy in. But Strauss Mann played him, you know, straight up, and Mann's been good. You know, people have been kind of tweeting at me a little bit about Portello, and I'm like, yeah, I'd see him, but, like, I don't know. Show me a goal or show me an instance where you're like, this guy's not cutting it. I mean, he's done everything he's needed to do. And like you said, a couple goals that have been pretty unlucky going off of sticks. You know, Notre Dame's not a great matchup. You know, we're going to see this week they play Penn State, who is going to be extremely wide open. Michigan's going to get a ton more chances. You'd expect them to get a lot more goals. You know, as long as they don't give away a ton in the back end, they're probably going to be okay. And then they play Minnesota, and that's going to be the fun one because I think that that's two of the teams that have the most talent. They can both move the puck from the back. They both have skaters. You know, those are going to be different kinds of games. Michigan's had to play 2 to 3, 4 different kinds of hockey. And, you know, this is probably always going to be their toughest sort of stylist to adjust to.
Yep. So back at it pretty soon. Hopefully Michigan can get a little bit more organized about attacking these kind of lockdown defensive teams, because there's going to be a couple more of them on the schedule.
Can we get a BTN Plus style subscription that only gives you the games with offensive teams?
I know that you were actually at Yost, but my God, so there's a score box now, so that's a positive.
Oh yeah,
there is, but the director kept cutting in to extreme close-up shots. And then the camera would careen wildly about the ice. It was literally nauseating. Like, after the first period on Friday, I just, like, sat up and just sort of held my head in my hands because it was, I just felt terrible.
Well, they're zooming in from up high, too, so you're seeing, like, their heads, and it's
I don't know if you've ever been playing a first-person shooter with not enough frame rate, but it's that feeling. It was terrible.
Well, you haven't been able to go to Cedar Point this summer, so they're trying to recreate some of those rides for you.
Like,
You strike me as a huge Cedar Point fan.
So they grasp farther than they can reach. Just use the one camera, the up-high camera, zoom it out, don't change your zoom, and put the puck on the screen. Get that down, and then occasionally you can cut to a close-up on a replay. That's what close-ups are for, Dave. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I see that in the football games too much, too, because that's all I can really focus on these days. The one thing I did want to notice was, you know, you talk about getting some bad puck luck, and you are kind of right, because, you know, with 2 seconds or 1.7 seconds left in the second period, you know, finally Bischel makes a mistake, and Pearson shoots back into him off of the faceoff, back towards his near side, I guess, and he misses it, and he flat out just whiffs on the puck. You know, and if there's 2.5 seconds or 3 seconds, you know, it's a goal. You know, Alex was timing it, and he looked like on replay, he said it looks like it's about 0.3 late. And, you know, that's just kind of one of those situations where you're just like, oh, geez, you know, and then Pasta stick tips it. And so Michigan didn't play great, and they didn't play, like, really well in ways, obviously. But, like you mentioned, you know, the Pasta stick tips the puck over man, and then, you know, person's shot is half a second too late. And, you know, that's the difference, at least in Saturday's game. And, it's unfortunate, but when you see those things, you can at least be encouraged, like, okay, well, maybe next time we flip it and things are different.
Yep, all right. We'll check in with you later, Dave. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, see you guys.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It's Black Friday today, and friend of the pod, Underground Printing, has you covered. Underground Printing is a great local business with multiple stores in Ann Arbor, including the Bose store, and they have tons of great Michigan apparel you can wear to proudly rep the maize and blue. Tackle all of your holiday gift needs with their Black Friday retail sale and shop safely with a 30% discount on all online orders, as well as free shipping on orders of $75 or more. Visit ugp.io/shopmichigan and make your Black Friday the easiest one ever with UGP.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Just to pass the time, there's something wrong here, there can be no denying, this one of us is changing, oh, maybe we both stop trying, and it's true.
We
welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. Just trying to get by during a football season where in the Big Ten, underdogs of more than 10 points keep on covering at an 11-5 rate. And with the Rutgers and Michigan State wins yesterday, underdogs of more than 10 points now have 7 outright wins in the Big Ten this year.
Is that a Michigan versus Ohio State tweet?
No, actually, I would say that that's probably one time you're going to want to skip that. I would think.
Well, Indiana continues its march through the non-Ohio State Big Ten, winning 27-11 against Indiana, a Maryland team that had its game last week canceled. Mm-hmm. So they're back on the field, and I thought it was interesting. One of the Indiana defensive backs in the aftermath of this game said that Talia Tungavailoa. I did it. Tungavailoa.
We'll also accept Baby Tua.
Maybe I should go with that. Baby Tua is a one-read quarterback, so wherever he looks is where he's going, and 3 Indiana interceptions might speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, they really were all over him during an 8-possession stretch from the 13-minute mark in the second quarter to where there's just 5 minutes left in the game. Baby Tua was 3-for-11 for 47 yards with 3 interceptions. He was sacked 3 times during that stretch. He ran the ball on design runs 3 times for 1 total yard, including a tackle in the end zone for a safety. So you're looking at 17 drop back and throws basically over the final 3 quarters, and he only gained 20 yards.
Yeah, and Maryland can't run at all, so it's either you get it to Dante Demas, who's a 5-star wide receiver who's playing for Maryland for some reason, or right, nothing is happening for you.
And he, you know, they had a very competent first drive, much like they had a very competent first drive way back when against Northwestern, and he had Demas wide open in the end zone. And he wasn't even under pressure, and he threw it basically into the stands. So he, in addition to being a one-read quarterback, he's got some accuracy issues. On one of the interceptions that he threw, you know, he threw it behind his receiver instead of leading him, and that led to it just an easy pick for Indiana as well. So on one of those picks, though, it's worth mentioning that Indiana had a long return, and they fumbled the return back to Maryland. So that's 2 weeks in a row where Indiana has picked the ball off and fumbled it away on the return.
A little bit of chaos team left.
Yeah. They could stop that.
On the other side of the ball, Michael Penix is having an absolutely terrible game.
Yeah.
When he runs the ball and then gets hurt, he has a leg injury. He leaves the game. Jack Tuttle comes in, and you're like, all right, well, who's the backup quarterback for Indiana? The backup quarterback for Indiana was a 4-star prospect ranked in the top 200 who committed to Utah in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got some recruiting bona fides there. You know, they didn't ask him to do much, but the game was still in doubt when he came in. It was 9-3 when he came in. And it was, 27-3 before Maryland tacked on a garbage touchdown at the end. So he wasn't out of his element, but again, they didn't ask him to do that much. Let's stay on Penix before we move on. Yeah, he was down on the ground for a long time. And then he got up and he kind of hobbled pretty badly, but at least he was on his own terms. They say it's a lower leg injury and we'll know more early in the week, but it's definitely going to lead to an uneasy week going into the Wisconsin game, because I doubt, you know, I'm sure they'll play coy with this, and we're not going to know all week what the status is. But you mentioned he was playing horribly before that. His first half, he was just 2-for-15 in the first half for 37 yards. It kind of looked like he might have come into the game with an injury because he was kind of trying to escape pressure real gingerly. It seemed like he was throwing with just his arm, if you will, just pushing the ball everywhere, and it wasn't going anywhere near.
I mean, he does that anyway, but yeah.
Well, that's true. But it seemed to be a little bit more this week. His only 2 completions were miracle catches by his receivers. Miles Marshall hauled down a circus catch for 37 yards, and then his only other completion in the first half was a batted pass that Peyton Hendershot caught kind of keeping it away from being an interception. So, yeah, he wasn't doing much. And this is another reason why I think that maybe that he was a little bit injured maybe coming in, because their design coming into this game was just to run. And this team has not been able to run the football all year. And even from the start, they were doing direct snaps. Three different running backs took direct snaps yesterday. They brought a freshman off the bench, Tim Baldwin, who had a 100-yard game and really his first appearance on the offense. So that part is speculation, but it's not speculation is that he was seriously hurt, it looks like, there in the third quarter.
Yeah, so Indiana will have to forge on, and they are now one Ohio State cancellation away from the Big Ten title game.
Yeah, they are.
Try to get that done for you, Jamie.
That would be great. That would be great. That's the other thing we're waiting pins and needles on this week, is that Ohio State Michigan State game going to be played. Real quickly, IU is 6-0 against the spread. They've covered every game this year, and I just want to mention how dominant this defense was again in the second half. It was 7-3 at halftime, and then over the course of the first nine drives in the second half, Indiana outgained Maryland 224-8 as they extended that lead to 27-3. Here's Maryland's first four second half drives. One play, tackle for loss, end zone, safety. A three and out that started with a sack on first down by Jerome Johnson. A two-play, -8-yard drive, sack on first down, interception on second down, and then a three-and-out that they actually had a second and one, and then Micah Mathadon sacked Baby Tua for a big loss on second down. So that, they were lights out. It was kind of fun to see.
I also want to point out that Maryland's 11 completes our sad 11 score trifecta now. I think everybody now has one.
Yep.
I'm tracking this all year because I think that's the saddest score you can have, where like you're down by, you have a field goal all game, and then you get a touchdown and go for two in garbage time.
Yeah.
So
wait, how many teams have done that now this year?
Well, Michigan and Maryland and Michigan State have all done it, I think.
Oh, what a crew. Go Big Ten East.
Rutgers 37, Purdue 30. This does not capture all that. Yeah, Bob Diaco rot in this game because Noah Vedral does not play.
No.
Most of the first half, they go with Artur Sitkowski. So if you remember Artur Sitkowski, he's the guy with 2 yards an attempt in most games. In the second half, they go to Johnny Langan, who's essentially a Wildcat quarterback. He gets 21 carries for 95 yards, throws the ball four times, also for 95 yards.
He's consistent.
They get a 100-yard kick return touchdown, and they ease past the Purdue Boilermakers and totally torpedo all thoughts from Michigan fans that, hey, maybe we should go get Jeff Brohm.
Right, yeah. Maybe they should get Sean Gleason. I don't know. Those Langan runs were crazy. He ran the ball 21 times, but 18 of those were in the second half, 15 of which came after Rutgers finally took the lead. So they took a 34-30 lead in the third quarter, and basically for the last quarter and a half, they were like, all right, Langan, just do quarterback power into the line, and, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards every time. Purdue could not stop them, and because of that, I hate to bring time of possession into it, but because of that, Rutgers held the ball for 19 minutes and 12 seconds of the final 23 minutes of the game. Yeah, exactly, right? Purdue had one possession during that time. In the middle of the fourth quarter, they went three and out, and they tried to convert a third and two run with Jack Plummer, and our old friend Michael Dwumfort blew up the play, and they had to punt, and they never got the ball back because it was just Langan run. It was,
That is, holding the ball is good strategy when you're Rutgers playing Purdue, because you know, like the fewer amount of times that Rondale Moore touches the ball, the fewer chances he has of getting, you know, every one in 20 times he gets it, he's just going to make you look ridiculous. So if he only touches it 20 times, he's only going to make you look ridiculous once, and he did that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the first half box score. Purdue actually had 3 minutes more of time of possession at halftime than Rutgers, and by the end of the game, Rutgers had an 11-minute TOP advantage. So that was it. I mean, and Purdue in the first half, they were awesome. 23 points, they were marching up and down the field. They actually had a fourth down that they failed on at the two. That was like the one drive they didn't score in the first half, but they got a safety out of it. And then after the free kick, they boom, 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 score. So it looked at halftime like it was going to be an eventual runaway by Purdue, but Rutgers hit a 62-yard touchdown pass right off the bat in the third quarter, a real sweet play. And then they had a kickoff return for a touchdown, too, in the second half by Cruikshank. You know, and those two plays kind of turned it into anybody's game all of a sudden. And then that's when these power runs that they came up with started to come into play.
Well, and I hate to bring this up because of what we saw in Michigan's opener, but the 62-yard touchdown, it's play action off a QB power look.
Yes.
So that kind of worst Waldo thing happened again where Langan just has to throw it in a window for guys who have sucked up, and then Cruikshank outruns a safety, and that's all she wrote. So, boy, it was nice when that was in Michigan's offense, however briefly.
Right. Oregon ran one of those this week, too, by the way.
God damn it.
So everybody's got it now but us. Ohio State's going to run it on us this year. I know that.
They also got in the red zone. They had two first quarter touchdowns, and on the second one, they did a throwback pass again. You know, it wasn't like the screen against Michigan. It was just Shamir Jones, and the whole play was going right, including Jones. And once he got to a hash, he just darted back the other way, and he was wide open in the end zone. And they've scored touchdowns now against Ohio State, Michigan, and Purdue on strange little throwback type plays. So say what you will about Rutgers, they're very improved, and they do run some pretty touchdown plays.
So that was a good win for Michigan then, huh?
Yeah, I guess. And by the way, Rutgers is now 2-0 against Purdue. Purdue's the only team in the Big Ten who's not beaten Rutgers yet. Just wanted to throw that out there.
All right, Michigan State 29-20. This game features a last play Keystone Cops attempt of all the laterals and then a touchdown return.
We only got two laterals in before it all fell apart.
Yeah, so it's a 23-20 game with 6 points tacked on at the end. Jalen Naylor gets a 75-yard touchdown pass from Rocky Lombardi, and that's pretty much the only thing that Michigan State did much of the day. I mean, I guess they did run the ball decently, but Northwestern kind of reverts back to last year where the quarterback's under 5 yards an attempt, throws two picks, and their ground game can't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you said it. That was in my notes, too. It's just like a step back to last year's offense, like sub-50 completion, 4.5 yards attempt. It was pretty bad out of Northwestern. Yeah, Rocky Lombardi hit that one big pass play. He had 167 yards passing on the day, 75 on one play. So he only went for 3.5 yards per attempt on his other 26 throws.
Well, the way to beat Michigan State is to try to edge them with athletes, right? We saw that with Rutgers. Michigan actually had some success when they put Corm out there, whatever. But Northwestern's athletes are Drake Anderson and Isaiah Bowser.
Yeah. So,
like, when those guys got outside, they were not going to be edging Noah Harvey. And I think that's where the game was, that Michigan State's defense actually can talent up against Northwestern's offense right now. I don't even think it was schematic. I think Northwestern just didn't have the horses to play the way that play against Michigan State the way that Michigan State plays.
Yeah, I
mean, the horses, this is a tie game in the fourth quarter, so it wasn't like it's a big blowout or anything. Total yardage is essentially identical.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm being relative here. Like, you know, you should be able to put 40 points on Michigan State if you're the way that Northwestern was playing. It's just every single time they try to get out to the edge, a linebacker got out before them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just not a good offense. I mean, we've raved about the improvements that Peyton Ramsey has brought to the offense, but I mean, it's like from 4.5 yards to pass to 6 yards per pass. That's still not that's still not good. That's just serviceable, you know, and they got in a hole this game because of some bad execution on in short yardage situations and on fourth down. You know, they drive the field, and they have second and one in the red zone, but they get stopped for a loss. They have third, so it's third and two. They get a no gain, and then they try on fourth and two, and they don't block Antoine Simmons, who tackles Bowser for a loss. The first play on Michigan State's ensuing drive was the touchdown bomb. The very next drive, they get it back in Michigan State's territory to the 42-yard line. Kyrick McGowan drops what would be a first down pass. They go for it again on fourth down. Ramsey throws a ball that only the defensive player could catch, Shakir Brown, and he returns it to the 11. So, boom, easy 3 points there. So, and then they were just on a slow comeback the whole way, and they just don't have the dynamic enough offense to kind of like come out of a hole like that. Like, it was just this slow, painful comeback. They finally tied it up, and then they threw another bad interception that led to the game-winning field goal. But so I kind of see where you're getting at, Seth. They just don't. When they fell behind 10-0 and then eventually 17-0, it was like, how are they going to do this? How in the world are they going to do this?
Yeah, and Michigan State, the way they score, right, like they hit, like Brian mentioned, they had one long pass to Jalen Naylor, right? Mm-hmm. So once in a while, that's going to hit, and I think that was like 50% of Rocky Lombardi's yards was that one pass.
Oh, yeah.
And then everything else was just like, I know, Michigan State was getting away with a ton of holding in this game, and that was hard to get them off the field because they were just, you know, getting 4 yards I think Rocky Lombardi had like one big edge run where it was just like an obvious tug on the end, and they didn't call it. Northwestern fans were, you know, for Northwestern fans, fairly livid about the situation there.
Yeah. I mean, they had to generate some offense in the fourth quarter, and I'm not going to count that last drive that ended with all those laterals. But previous to that, their final 4 drives of the game, they only gained 2 yards in 10 total plays. They fumbled it away. They had a pair of 3-and-outs. Ramsey threw the interception that I mentioned. They just couldn't generate even enough offense to get into field goal range when the game was on the line. The Naylor bomb, and then Naylor caught another catch later in the game, and in both those plays, the announcer made a point to mention that Jalen Naylor was stepping up to replace the phenomenal Ricky White. I was pissed because, one, Jalen Naylor is out there anyway. The phenomenal adjectives both times really made me watch the Purdue-Rutgers game instead. That was going on simultaneously.
Yes, we're all aware of Ricky White's targets and catches in games not against Michigan. Iowa 26, Nebraska 20. Nebraska actually leads this in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. Iowa comes back with the last 13 points of the game, including the worst possible field goal you can kick, which is a field goal to go up from up 3 to up 6 deep into the fourth quarter, but they get away with it with a sack strip fumble. Adrian Martinez returns as the starting quarterback as Luke McCaffrey is sort of marginalized. And I mean, this was very much a rock fight where both teams struggled to get over 300 yards. They made it, but barely.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where to start with this game. It was,
at the beginning, it looked like Iowa was just going to trounce them, right? Like, Iowa, Petros was on at first, and then I think Nebraska's first drive went, like, no yards, and then all of a sudden they just started getting out on the edge with, what's his name again?
Wandale Robinson.
Yeah, Wandale Robinson. You know, I like the way that they kind of used Adrian Martinez and Luke McCaffrey to kind of change up the pace a little bit.
Yeah, they were always rotating in.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, I think that Scott Frost really wanted this one. Like, he had a July drive in this one on their second or third drive. And, they looked more prepared for Iowa than I think they've looked for anybody this year.
Well, you know, they outgained him, they outrushed him, they outpassed him. You know, I mean, the box score is a slight win across the board for Nebraska, so that's something for Scott Frost.
They probably hit harder too.
They did. They probably did. You know, I think the good news for Nebraska is that offensively, there are a ton of freshmen and redshirt freshmen out there contributing to the cause. And they also have now 3 of Frost recruits starting on the offensive line. So, you know, maybe kind of the seeds of, you know, something good is finally starting to bloom there. You know, I mean, we've been wondering who the playmakers were going to be in the future for Nebraska. And maybe they have a collection of young guys that, you know, come 2022, you know, could really be competing maybe for some all Big Ten honors. I guess it just depends how the quarterbacks keep
Their linebackers are terrible. And not terrible, like, not talent-wise. Like, they just cannot, they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Well, I was talking about the offense, and I was like, it depends on how the quarterback's
doing.
The defense is an entirely different set of circumstances because, they're still, they've got a walk-on linebacker who might be their best linebacker in Luke Reimer. You know, and they've got a lot of experienced guys in the secondary. Some of them aren't that good, though. we have a lot of things we could talk about in this game. We could talk about, how about Nebraska center, Casey Juergens, year two, he still can't snap the ball. He got pulled in this game because he had two bad snaps. And then Frost was complaining afterwards that Iowa was clapping on the sideline, and that's what was causing the bad snaps.
And we got another great press conference from Ferentz afterwards.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he was mocking that complaint the whole way.
He said when started telling a story about like when his son was screwing around with and actually got away with it at Central Michigan. I want to go back and find that one now.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean Nebraska, that's the second straight week cuz a couple weeks ago I watched them against Penn State for the Penn State preview and there were a whole bunch of bad snaps in that one too.
It's the second straight year. Juergens started last year as a redshirt freshman, and it was a huge knock on his game. I mean, and the Nebraska insiders think this kid's got NFL potential, but, I mean, if he can't do a shotgun snap, I mean, he's literally killing one drive a game because of that. And you just they're just so young everywhere else on the offense. You just can't do that.
Yeah, Maryland had a guy like that a few years ago, too. I actually put a compilation together of all of his snaps when I was doing faux film.
Nice.
Patched them all together. And then I wanted to know what your guys' thoughts was on Iowa deciding to kick the field goal, or the one that they missed, actually. Tried a 51-yard field goal on 4th-and-1 on Nebraska's 32 at the end.
I mean, well, one, we should talk about the sound. It hit the crossbar and made this huge sound. You know, that was great. You know, I feel like they should have gone for it. You know, in the first half, their running game was really bottled up. Tyler Goodson, 9 of his first 11 carries went for 2 yards or less. But that was in the first half. In the second half, though, and he had big holes. He had 87 yards on, like, 17 carries. Like, I really felt like they should have gone for it. They should have put it in his hands.
And Sargent was really hitting the cutback lanes, too. So, you know, they had a couple guys that they could have gone to on those plays.
Yeah.
I mean, you also, you know, Petrus is not a small guy. Like, they can get a yard. Actually, sorry, it was a 4th-and-2. But, yeah, when it clanged off the cross, off the bar there, I was like, yep, that's what happens.
Yep.
They could have ended the game,
you know,
too.
They were in trouble right away. You know, they hit Wandell Robinson for a big play. They're in Iowa territory. They got something cooked. But, as always, the Iowa defensive line, game in and game out, year in and year out, saves him. Chauncey Golson chops the hands away of the right guard. He's in Martinez's face right away. Sack, fumble, and Von Valkenburg recovers it. Game over. But it was about to come back and haunt them after, you know, they got into Iowa territory.
All right. Well, I think that's enough on that game. The other two games, of course, got canceled this weekend, so I think that's it for us.
Okay, can I mention one thing about Scott Frost? It'll be really quick.
Okay, sure.
Okay. His record now is 10-19. That is one game worse than Tim Brewster's record after his first 29 games at Minnesota when he was 11-18. Just thought that'd be a nice thing to kind of end this on.
All right, thank you, Jamie. We'll talk to you next week.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sandbender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. I promise to make more of an effort going forward to insert more basketball talk into these podcasts.
Ah!
Yeah, my brain has been deeply poisoned. Okay, someone's excited about Mark Stoops.
A small child has just infiltrated the Seth bunker, which is fine. It happens.
Super Ryan. Yeah, that was Super Ryan. Perhaps he can coach.